听力课堂，听 class.com。
Passage 2. English to Chinese Interpretation. Text Interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Distinguished Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I am very glad to come to the beautiful city Kuala Lumpur to attend the second Asian Business Summit. First of all,I would like to hereby extend sincere gratitude to the chairman of the organizing committee for his kind invitation. In the first years of the new century, the world economy and trade are undergoing significant and profound changes. The economic globalization has promoted the development of world economy while all countries are facing new chances and challenges in development.Since the 1990s, with the end of the Cold War and the dramatic advancement of science and technology, the economic globalization has paced up. At present, it is the objective trend of world economic development that has greatly enhanced the interdependence and mutual influence of world economies. The fundamental characteristic of world economic developmentis the free flow and allocation of commodities, technologies, information, and especially capital in the global context. Driven by the economic globalization, international economic relations have taken on a series of new features. The speed of international capital movement is higher than that of international trade growth. The volume of international trade is expanding faster than world economy.And transnational corporations keep on expanding their magnitude and consolidating their roles in the global economy. In general, the economic globalization will help optimize the allocation of production factors across the world, facilitate international trade and investment liberalization, and develop world economy and trade. However,The economic globalization was initiated by developed countries at the time when the old international economic order had not been essentially transformed. All countries, especially developing nations, are faced with not only development opportunities, but also severe challenges, risks, and the question of how to protect one's own economic safety. Developed countries are the largest beneficiariesowing to their advantageous positions in capital, technology, human resources, management, and other aspects. On the contrary, developing countries are holding an overall inferior position because of the relatively low economic and technological levels. In face of the challenges posed by the economic globalization, the question of whether developing countries can seize the chances,and avoid negative effects, and whether they can be more competent to withstand and dissolve risks so as to ensure economic safety and accelerate their economic growth, is essentially dependent on whether they will base themselves upon their national realities, bring into full play their advantages, and try every effort to strengthen their economic capacity.Only thus can they take the initiative in the process of economic globalization and benefit more from it. During the course, by adhering to the principles of equality, reciprocity, and common development, the international community should reinforce economic and technical cooperation and properly deal with the interest relationship between developed and developing countries.Efforts should also be dedicated to establishing a new international economic order that is just and fair, and to achieving the common development among developing and developed nations. Science and technology make progress with each passing day, which has deep impact on the world economic and trade development. The rise of knowledge-based economy,coupled with the overwhelming scientific and technological revolution, has led to consistent innovations in information technology, biotechnology, new materials, new energy, space technology, and oceanic technology. The birth of Internet and its sweeping spread have resulted in giant leaps forward of the means of people's communication with each other and knowledge acquisition. Knowledge increasingly becomes the decisive factor of economic development. All these have given strong impetus and vitality to world economic and trade development, whose tremendous influences will have more apparent reflection in the economic growth of the 21st century. In the era of knowledge-based economy, in order to further strengthen comprehensive national strength, every country in the world has made it an important national policy to vigorously build up the high-tech sector and accordingly invested a large number of human resources, materials, and capital in this aspect. Strongly supported by science and technology, international trade is expanding from the traditional trade in goods to trade in services and technology trade. Moreover, the fast-growing e-commerce with network technology as its basis is turning into an important approach of international trade. Therefore, the country that enjoys scientific and technological advantages, especially those of forward-looking nature, will get sharper edge in future international economic competitions. Ladies and gentlemen, I believe that in the new century, so long as we make concerted efforts and strengthen our economic and trade cooperation, the East Asian economic development will once again unfold a brilliant chapter. May the Asia a shining future. Thank you all.
Section 4. Interpretation Practice. Note-taking and gap-filling. Note-taking. Listen to the tape and take any necessary notes. The China-ASEAN Free Trade Zone embraces 1.7 billion consumers, nearly $2,000 billion worth of GDP, and a trade total of $1,200 billion. Calculated in accordance with population, this will be the largest free trade zone in the world. From the perspective of economic scale, the China-ASEAN Free Trade Zone will be the largest of its kind formed among the developing countries. It is the first regional free trade arrangement made by China and other countries, and an important move taken by China to strengthen its regional economic cooperation with neighboring countries. It will not only further consolidate and strengthen the existing traditional friendly relations between China and the ASEAN countries and promote Asian peace and stability, but will also facilitate the respective economic development of China and the ASEAN and will help expand the scale of bilateral trade and economic cooperation, enhance the overall competitiveness of the economies of this region, and jointly meet the challenges posed by economic globalization and regional economic integration. Gap filling. Listen to the tape and fill in the blanks with the words missing.
Globalization has enhanced the development of world economy, but it has also caused imbalances in it. Developing countries, which account for the majority of the world population, have not been able to fully participate in global economic activities. While having benefited much less from globalization in contrast to developed countries, developing countries are bearing the brunt of globalization's negative impact. Many of them have even been further marginalized. It is a serious question for the international community as to how to facilitate the integration of developing countries into the world economy in the 21st century. Efforts by developing countries on their own are indispensable, but influence of the international environment is also not to be neglected. In this regard, global governance is critical. The current international financial and trade system represents mostly the interests of the rich countries. The poor countries have little say in its decision-making process, and their interests are often neglected. If this kind of inequality in global governance goes on unchecked, by globalization, will become even worse rather than better. In our view, developed countries, those heavyweight players in the global economy, should take into consideration the long-term objectives of global prosperity as well as their own long-term interests, correct the inequalities in global governance, attach importance to the voice of developing countries, and support the latter's full participation in the formulation of international rules of games.
Passage interpretation. Passage 1. Chinese to English interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
尊敬的梅加马蒂总统阁下，各位同事，我很高兴来到美丽的巴厘岛，与东盟及日韩领导人聚集一堂，共商东亚合作发展大计。首先，我仅对东道主的周到安排表示衷心的感谢。10+3的建立与发展，使东亚国家顺应经济全球化发展潮流，寻求共同发展的重要创举。6年来，10+3从无到有，从虚到实，由东亚国家间的对话会议成长为内容丰富的合作体系。在东亚合作联合声明的指导下，我们建立起了较为完善的运作机制。合作内容从金融经贸向政治、社会和安全等领域不断扩展。在推进10+3的过程中，东亚各国展现出了高度的协调与合作精神。东盟作为发起者，为10+3的顺利发展做出了突出贡献，是东亚合作的主要推动力量。中日韩三国努力发展与东盟的双边互利合作，同时在10+3框架内积极探索开展三边合作，为东亚合作进程增添了重要内涵。各位同事，作为本地区国家的领导人，我们有责任认真思考在新形势下如何深化10+3合作问题。我愿就此谈一些想法。东亚区域经济加强合作，互惠共赢，共同发展，正在成为本地区新世纪发展的主题。加强区域经济合作是东亚发展的客观要求。在经济全球化趋势加快发展的背景下，本地区国家只有联合自强，才能抓住新的机遇，战胜新的挑战，实现持久繁荣。加强区域经济合作是历史的重要启示。事实证明，平等互利合作才是通向地区长期和平、稳定与繁荣的康庄大道。加强区域经济合作是东亚经济的必然方向。多年来，东亚一直是全球经济增长最快的地区，目前经济总量约占世界总量的23%，外汇储备占世界总数的64%，市场规模、技术力量、自然资源和人力资源等也都可以与欧洲、北美相媲美。东亚国家间经贸关系日益紧密，相互交融不断加深，区内贸易占东亚总贸易额的近50%， 区内投资占东亚经济体引资总额的约2/3。所有这些都显示了东亚合作的坚实基础和发展潜力。经过多年的努力，十加三为东亚合作进一步发展和逐步实现区域经济一体化提供了有效机制。十加三有必要在现有基础上明确长远目标，推进实际合作，提高合作水平。东亚地区存在着很大的差异，逐步深化十加三合作需要遵循以下原则：平等协商，各国应通过协商谋求一致，在平等的基础上发挥作用，使十加三合作符合各方的共同需要和利益。互利共赢，合作的目的是共赢，应努力缩小相对落后的东亚国家的发展差距，尽可能让他们多受益。只有这样，十加三合作的基础才能更加巩固。循序渐进，现在区域合作仍处在初始阶段，我们既要积极进取，也要照顾各方的实际情况，一步一步地扎实推进合作进程。开放包容，东亚的发展离不开世界，我们不能自我封闭，更不应形成排他性集团，而应在深化区域合作的同时，加强与其他地区和国家的合作。
Passage 2 English to Chinese Interpretation. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Your Excellencies, distinguished participants, ladies and gentlemen, let me first of all express my heartfelt gratitude for the honor accorded to me by inviting me to speak on economic cooperation and development in Asia at this first annual conference of the Boao Forum for Asia this morning. I cannot do better than echo even louder the many words of praise that have been expressed on how successful this forum has become. Please allow me to take this opportunity to congratulate Premier Zhu, the government of the People's Republic of China, and the Board of Directors for their foresight and leadership in launching this unique forum. Unique because rarely could businessmen, academics, government officials from so many Asian countries have a chance to meet, mingle, express, and discuss freely in quest for prosperity, stability, and security in Asia. All of us are proud to be part of this uniqueness. When reference is made to economic cooperation and development in Asia, which I'm afraid is also a theme of my talk this morning, some of us just could not resist the feeling, well, here we go again. We have heard the words economic cooperation and development in Asia how many thousands times over, months after months, years after years, and decades after decades. And so what? Has Asia developed? Yes. Have we cooperated economically? Yes. But do our people still suffer from poverty? I'm afraid our answer remains yes. Are we still sometimes at each other's throat on trade and economic issues rather than cementing our cooperation? Undeniably and unfortunately, one must admit, some of us still are from time to time. So what are the reasons then? Two things at least. One for sure, first and foremost, we just have not done enough for our people. By we, I mean both the business and private sectors, the government and public sectors, the academic and the NGO sectors. There is still so much more we have to do so that economic cooperation in the region will benefit our peoples to the optimum. Secondly, and by no means no less important, is that economic cooperation and development are not for preaching. They are to be practiced and implemented. There is no time for preaching. Last month, I was so glad I did make it to the UN International Conference on Financing for Development in Monterrey, Mexico. For one thing, the right to development is an issue so close to my heart. That right will never be realized with appropriate financing. I was there not only because of the kind invitation extended to me by both the UN Secretary General and President Fox of Mexico, but also because I wanted to have my share of contribution to make sure that the result of that conference would not be kept only on paper. Indeed, the ball has started rolling faster with the Monterrey consensus with commitment to make development benefits for all. And now, with this forum taking place and few other things I shall elaborate in a few moments, I hope we are about to enter into a more exciting arena of economic cooperation in Asia, with expectation for the global and regional economic recovery and regional prosperity, a prospect as exhilarating as the World Cup being hosted in Asia for the first time in 6 weeks. First, I wish to refer to China's entry to the WTO. This is jubilant. This is indeed a tremendous and highly promising occurrence, not only for China's future, but for Asia as a whole, as well as for the rest of the developing world. The Chinese economy has now emerged as one of the most dynamic economies on earth, with great potential for future growth and development. A rich China means a prosperous Asia.
Unit 14. Management Strategies. Section 1. Dialogue for Interpretation. Text Interpreting. Interpret the following conversation alternatively into English and Chinese.
What would you say are some of the key differences that you have noticed in management and work style between China and the West?
我发现有些明显的差异，例如中国的经理做事紧张而快速，总给人一种压力感和紧迫感。 在中国，我有时感觉到我们在处理事务的时候，似乎不像你们西方人那样重视计划，也就是说，我们强调的是短期目标。确实，我们有这样一种感觉：在紧张和压力下，我们会把事情做得更好。但是出现了一个很有意思的矛盾，那就是在我们更宽泛的中国文化环境里，我们是非常注重长远计划的。 同样，我了解到许多西方的经理仍在抱怨他们的财政计划限制太死，时间不够长。What
about the role of leadership and the differences you see there?
一谈到领导和权力，我就发现差异是多方面的。在西方，领导权通常是以任务为中心的，而且直截了当。 而中国经理更注重的是决定谁是否胜任某项工作和任务。在中国，个人关系会决定谁能够做什么事情。在中国的传统文化里，公司老板掌握着全部的权力，组织等级是管理一个组织或公司的关键因素，是经营一家公司的主要机制。 公司的老板必须无所不知，并能够随时指明方向。员工总是期待老板的指示和领导，因此也过多的依赖他们的老板。 这意味着处于公司下层的人员一般较少采取主动，缺乏主人翁的精神。这种行为在西方经理的眼里就是逃避责任。头衔也显得很重要，称呼老板的名是不得体的，员工必须使用正式的头衔来称呼他们的老板，始终要注意规矩和表现出尊敬。
How do you compare this approach to the Western approach?
对比之下，我认为西方的经理要开放得多，与人相处也比较平等。总而言之，西方人能够共商更多的事物，在这些讨论中可以看出他们对待问题的主人翁精神和对项目投入负责的态度。在中国人看来，这种做法只能会导致决策的缓慢，甚至在某些情况下导致尴尬。中国人的行为方式通常引起快速做出决定，但这并不意味着人们就认真积极地参与了决策，他们对公司的忠诚不见得明显。当你看见中国人行色匆匆谋求发展的时候，就知道他们对公司不够忠诚。
Much has been made about differences in dealing with conflict. How do you see these?
许多人都知道，中国人一般回避在公共场合或在公开会议上处理冲突和矛盾。丢面子在亚洲国家是一个大禁忌，丢面子被认为是很可耻的事情。在公开会议上发难而引起对某人的批评被认为是一大错误，但这并不意味着中国的经理互相之间就没有冲突，他们处理冲突的方式通常是私下的和秘密的。在公开会议上，中国的经理说话时总显得矜持和委婉，他们处理矛盾的方式是柔弱迂回的。西方人乐于在公开论坛上集难，而这种做法通常被认为是一种态度积极的表现。处理冲突的方式都是公开和直接的，问题一出现通常能马上得到处理。
How do you think Chinese and Westerners perceive each other?
你这个提法会引出许多问题来。我想许多欧洲的经理都认为中国人经常改变想法，行为中表现出前后矛盾。相比之下，中国的老板大权在握，决策迅速，并有能力应付危机。在制定和完成决策方面，西方的经理在中国的老板眼里总是笨拙缓慢的。这种彼此间的印象常常给人带来挫败感。中国的老板不理解为什么西方的老板还要经过协商并向其总部汇报。这种做法通常被认为是缓慢的官僚作风。中国的经理认为西方的经理只说不做。我也觉得有些西方经理对中国的管理干部抱有偏见。有部分人认为中国人古板不可靠，也常听到西方人说中国人缺乏专业知识和能力。当然，我们不可能任何时候都知道西方的最新标准，但我们做事情是快速而有效率的。说到底，不管站在哪个角度来看，都不能说是对或错，只能说各有不同。学会理解这些差异，在某种程度上能帮助我们明白事理。
Section 2 Text for Interpretation Passage 1 Chinese to English Interpretation Text Interpreting Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from Chinese into English.
女士们，先生们，早上好。我很高兴能有机会参加这次关于管理策略的研讨会。下面我想就管理中的组织结构这个问题谈谈个人的粗浅看法。组织结构是一项基本管理功能，为了让人们能够更有效地合作，必须明确他们的任务、目标、责任与权利。 这就需要设立一个正式的组织来规约他们相互间的种种关系，为决策的交流与沟通提供方便。如果这样的组织能使所有个体以最低的成本实现企业的目标，那么它就是有效的。一家小企业也许只设立了一个以一名经理为核心的简单组织，但当它的规模扩大到一定程度时，这名经理就无法有效地管理每一个人，而必须任命下级经理。这种规模上限通常被称为经理监控跨度。当这个组织进一步发展时，下级经理又最终会到达他们的监控跨度上限，此时就有必要设立第三级经理。这种监控跨度会因组织的不同而有所差异。通常管理级别越低，跨度上限就越宽。如果在一名上层经理之下设3至8名经理，每位下层经理就有可能要管12至13个人。当管理的级别数增加时，管理的费用就会增加，沟通、计划与控制就会变得更加困难。因此一家企业要尽量减少管理的级别数，这意味着每名经理的监控跨度要尽量设宽一些。把一家企业的组织分成不同的部门，而每个部门由一名下级经理管理，这通常不能仅以数目多寡为基础。在大多数情况下，这个组织必须能够反映企业的各项功能，如企业的工程、生产、营销、营业和财务等。这些功能会因企业的类型不同而有所不同，如一家航空公司就不可能设生产部，一家制造公司也不会设营业部。如果一家企业分布的地域宽广，那么根据地理特点来设立部门也许是有效的做法。这种分设部门的办法或许能节省运输费用，简化人员招聘工作，尤其在非发达国家还可以简化通讯工作。当一家公司从事专门的项目活动时，如航天工业，其根据功能或产品来划分的部门综合起来就构成了所谓的项目管理或矩阵组织。项目经理要对该项目负责并行使权力，其属下的人员将从各职能部门调派。矩阵组织是一个灵活的组织，它会随着项目的结束而解散。如果项目经理对完成项目有明确的目标，那么这种组织体系是富有效率的。在以上所讨论的各种部门划分类型中，从上到下形成了一种直线式的责权管理方式，通常称之为线式组织。在某些结构复杂的现代企业中，或许还设有专门的顾问部门，负责协助管理，但无权直接管理各下级部门。这些部门通常称为参谋部门。为了节省和方便管控，常常把一些专项活动，如采购、会计和数据分析等，交给服务部门处理，由参谋部门提出建议，协调管理关系。 参谋部门有时候能在一定领域里行使职权，例如这个部门的管理人士有权为产品经理制定财会程序，但这样的职权必须明确，以免破坏县市组织中各级经理领导的统一性。任何组织结构都应以工作类别划分为基础，也就是以为达到企业目标而需从事的各类活动为基础。只要有利于达到企业目标，这个组织结构就是有效的。谢谢大家。
Passage 2. English to Chinese Interpretation. Text Interpreting. Listen to the tape and interpret the following passage from English into Chinese.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. I want to thank Frank Clegg and Microsoft Canada for bringing us all together for this second summit on business leadership issue, and particularly for giving us the opportunity to discuss the issue of innovation. In the 19th century, railroads were the big innovation. Perhaps nothing matched their economic impact until the advent of the personal computer. But some of you may wonder what a railroader has to say about innovation in the 21st century. My message is that no enterprise needs to be more innovative than an established business in a mature industry. Let me give you examples of 4 innovations. Then, I will talk about some of the obstacles we encountered and the lessons learned. 1. Network innovation. Let me begin with the most obvious innovation, our North American network. With the Free Trade Agreement and NAFTA, trade patterns changed in North America, from east-west to north-south. We saw that Canada-US trade and trade with Mexico was growing. The trucks were handling most of that growth. We wanted more of the action. Through mergers and partnerships, CN created a unique rail network designed to take advantage of the growth of north-south trade. Today, CN not only crosses Canada, we also go right through the center of the United States, down to the Gulf of Mexico. We have become a North American railroad. That is CN's first innovation. 2. Service innovation. Our second innovation was through our commitment to customer service. A few years ago, we told our customers we would deliver our service with no delays and no excuses. At that time, making a commitment to customer service was a real innovation in our industry. We looked at rail transportation from a different perspective, our customer's perspective. Other railroads focused on marshaling trains, waiting for enough freight to make a train's trip cost-effective. But our customers do not care whether the train is cost-effective. They care about whether their car and its contents are going to arrive on time. We began a system of scheduled freight service that delivers cars on time. CN's customers can choose their service from a catalog that lists origins and destinations. The delivery times are listed not in number of days, but in number of hours. Scheduled rail freight service is proving to be a revolutionary innovation in North American transportation. It also gives us a foundation for innovations in other areas. 3. Franchise innovation. For one thing, it lets us redefine our franchise. By franchise, I mean the products for which we have the best reputation for moving, It is our turf. The traditional railroad franchise is bulk commodities that are too heavy to be carried cost-effectively by truck. Coal, potash, and grain, for example. We wanted to complement this franchise to include more merchandise freight. To do this, we had to compete directly with trucks for time-sensitive deliveries. With our scheduled delivery, we can now compete with trucks on the basis of reliability. We have cut a day off the transit times between Toronto and Western Canada. We arrive on schedule 90% of the time. We are aiming for 95%. Our goal is to create a transportation service that offers customers a competitive advantage, a service so superior that customers think that a premium price is reasonable. As a result, we have become the largest carrier of forest products in North America, shipping products such as lumber, paper, pulp, and board. Our growth rate in moving petroleum and chemical products has been superior. These products are becoming important components of our franchise. 4. Technology innovation. Scheduled service also provides a foundation for innovation in our e-business solutions. We have been using electronic data interchange for years, and we continue to work with our customers to create internet applications that give them the information they need when they need it. Years ago, we were the first railroad to provide online information that lets customers track their shipments. Every day on our website, our customers track the location of about 90,000 shipments. Customers can click onto our website and order a car, send us shipping instructions, ensure that we pick up their delivery as scheduled, track the shipment to its destination, receive an invoice, clarify any questions, and pay the bill. Other railroads are promoting electronic technology. The difference with our e-business is that it is linked to our scheduled delivery. I am not an expert on technology and its various applications, but I am determined to make CN easier for our customers to do business with. Electronic technology has given us the tools. Thank you for your listening.